Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Fun, fun, fun. That's what hour one was on the Chuck Oliver Show, at least by my estimation. Had Chris Landry on talking college football because he does that every Wednesday, bottom of hour one. Coming up in about 10 minutes, I'm just going to say real good friend of the program who has some big news to share. So we'll be talking a little Tennessee Vols in about 10 with a special guest. And then bottom of the hour, Rick Blue from 1010XL. Great station, truly great station down yonder in Jacksonville. They're an FM AM down there. Aren't they, Dan? Yeah, okay, I got a thumb. FM AM down there in Jacksonville, and just one of the best sports talk stations in the South. So we're going to have Rick Blue on talking FSU football, bottom of the hour. But right now, I get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football, every single day. This is CFB 365.
Headline. Ole Miss running back returns to working out with team. That would be Jerrion Ealy because of a shoulder issue. He had surgery in the offseason. He's listed as a sophomore. He's a third-year player who will, I believe, go pro after this year. Chuck's opinion. Kid's 5'8", 190, so he's not the biggest kid in the world. We've always known that, but that wasn't really his game, is lowering her shoulder and, you know, plowing over folks. Not only has he been really good on the ground, though, but catching the ball, which was always going to be his forte. I was like, he's going to be just the everything, the dash, the comma, the slash player, whoever. Special teams, let him catch the ball, whatever. Certainly in the run game. He got really good running the football last year. He was even better in the passing game. Caught just about everything thrown to him, 36 out of 42 targets. But again, the offseason shoulder surgery, he's back working out with the team as they're ready to hit the field and start preparing for their season opener. So good news for the Ole Miss Rebels. Want to stay in the SEC, and good news for the Auburn Tigers, at least as far as you can get on July 28th. Headline. Auburn receives verbal commitment from four-star running back. That would be class of 22 running back Damari Alston, 5'10", 205, about to play his senior year of high school. 28th running back in America. All right. 27th overall prospect in Georgia. Now you're talking. 1,500 yards, 25 touchdowns last year. Auburn now has seven committed recruits for the 2022 class, and then this is the most furthest off. See, that's just a commit. Why would you take CFT 365 time talking about just a commit? Because at least it could happen sooner than our next story. Headline, Florida, UCF agreed to three-game series. A three-game, two-for-one. What did Danny White, the AD, like 5 years ago, 4 years. We won't play two for ones. We're better than that. Ah. Yeah, well, UCF's playing a two for one. They'll go to Gainesville in 2024 and allegedly 2033. Who knows if that game, that's 12 years, folks. But they are under contract. 24 and 33, that's in Gainesville. And by terms of the signed agreement, UF is scheduled to play in Orlando September 14th, 2030. Whatever. It's a contract you sign. The first game will take place, I am almost certain. I have no idea what the landscape of the conference, college football in general, regular season schedules, as in how many. I don't know any of that stuff, but I can tell you I am very, very confident the 2024 game will take place. We will break. When we come back, we'll talk a little Tennessee Vols as they're ready to hit the field up on Rocky Top.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family-owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.
To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Two things, folks. First, I love good things happening to good people because every one of us, whether it's the treadmill, the hamster wheel, whatever it is you want to call your professional life, hopefully it's not either of those, but you feel like it sometimes. Am I getting ahead? Am I going anywhere? So I like good things happening to good people, and especially in the media industry, in the sports media industry. I had a boss tell me, 19 years ago, quote, "I've got 400 resumes on my desk. They'll do your job for free." Okay, I don't want to raise. I'm good. So that's working in sports media. When you get a job and then you love it and then you're able to kind of advance, it's all kinds of good stuff. I want to welcome on now a guy who covers the Tennessee Vols, Adam Sparks. What are you doing, man?
Yeah, a little different today.
Give everybody the professional news.
Yeah, I went from the Vanderbilt beat to the Tennessee Vols beat, which, if you don't know, it's kind of a hard left turn.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's those rivals, obviously in-state rivals, and completely different fan bases. And so it was I've known for a while, but breaking it on Twitter to the Vanderbilt fan base was something I did not look forward to, but. But it's out now, and I'm living in Knoxville and on a new beat from the opposite side that I've been for the last 7 years.
Absolutely. So no longer covering Vandy. It is the Tennessee beat for the Knoxville News Sentinel. Folks, that's not nothing, as we say in the South. All right, well, let's talk big picture Tennessee, because I have said, and I have heard a lot of others as well, there's a choir that Texas and OU joining the SEC, it'll really hurt those teams who live in the 4-7, 8-win range because, oh, it's just a struggle to make a bowl. Well, that's Tennessee. Does OU and Texas coming to the conference really have to be a tough time for the Tennessee program?
Well, I mean, there's some benefits that Tennessee can look at in terms of, obviously, the revenue distribution will be a whole lot more. That'll fund facilities and a lot of other things for all the schools. You know, there's a few others that Tennessee can look at, and that's what they're going to have to do is look at silver linings because this is going to go through. You know, what's good for the conference is going to have to be good for each conference member, although necessarily individual members, you're right, it's not necessarily good for. I think you really hit the nail on the head with those middling teams. You know, Tennessee, Missouri, Ole Miss, South Carolina – those type of teams that were middle of the pack or are middle of the pack now, they all get bumped down two spots with Oklahoma and Texas coming in. And, you know, I mean, Georgia, Alabama will be fine. I think Texas A&M actually in the long run could benefit from this a little bit. LSU will be fine. Florida will be fine, so on and so forth. But, yeah, a team like Tennessee that, you know, in a good year – wins 8-9 games in a bad year, is going to win 5. You know, suddenly you look at a team now that in a good year, maybe a little bit over 500. They're going to have to fight that if the schedule gets much tougher. And with Oklahoma and Texas coming into the conference, that's certainly the case, especially if, I mean, you're going to have realignment. Probably, I mean, most of the models that you see is going to bump like Alabama-Auburn into the east, or a pod system. Alabama and Auburn could be in with Tennessee and Vanderbilt. None of that is good for Tennessee, and so it'll be an uphill climb. But you know, once Greg Sankey put out that statement yesterday, you knew he had the vote, so to speak. You don't make that, put that out unless you have the votes. I'm sure they do.
Oh yeah, I had it equated to the FBI indicting you. Like their close rate is like 99%. The FBI don't jump until they're ready. It's the same thing Sankey and the SEC. When that, I was like, folks, this is done. The only question is, will it be 14-0 or like 13-0 and one abstention? Continuing again, talking Tennessee with Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News. I wanted one more thing about this before we move on. You mentioned the budgetary advantages there, the revenue windfall. Where is Tennessee right now? Because if we go back, I mean, maybe a decade ago, 5 years ago, I mean, it literally was like a couple of $100 million in debt with a new facility and everything else they had done. And somehow an SEC athletic department was in the red. Where are they in 2021?
They're in better shape. They have a pretty sizable renovation that's sort of started but will be completed in the next year and a half on Neyland Stadium. You know, everybody in the conference is needing to do that, and Tennessee is kind of catching up to that. They still have some fundraising to go, but, you know, that's another reason why you look at the revenue distribution and, you know, the top of that, the president, chancellor, executive side – is going to say, absolutely, we'll take the extra check. We'll figure out how to win later.
That's an easy vote.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's where people look around as they people think schools are for sure yes or for sure no privately with this expansion. I think it depends on the level that you're asking in the university. The president chancellor's office is absolutely yes. I think a lot of ADs are kind of on the fence. Yeah, I'd love the revenue, but it is going to be tough for my football team to win. And then you get to down to the coach level. I haven't talked to Josh Heupel, but I can't imagine he loves the idea of putting his alma mater, Oklahoma and Texas, in the conference. So it really depends on what level of a university you're asking that about. And coaches certainly don't want – they want more chances to win, and this is going to be less chances.
I grew up, you know, a boy in the South, and I'm not an Alabama or Tennessee fan, but third Saturday in October was reverence for me. And I made a comment yesterday, and I was like, no, I actually want to ask an expert here. I said the Tennessee, because we're talking about whether we pot them or divisions. I was like, I don't care. Line them up 1 through 16. I don't care what you do. But do you think Tennessee fans care about still having the Alabama game on the schedule?
If they have at all a chance of winning that game, absolutely. If it's a 35-point loss, that's when I think that's when a lot of fans will watch the first half and then turn it off and forget it never happened.
Do you think that it is a game that, in general, the Tennessee fan base wants to preserve that guaranteed annual matchup?
Yeah, I think so, because Nick Saban is not going to coach when he's 100. I think that's the holding out hope, that one day Nick Saban is going to retire, and then the guy that follows him up may take a half a step back. And what if by chance Tennessee has found their right coach at that exact same moment, and Tennessee takes a half step forward? Then you've got a competitive game again. That's a lot of what ifs, but I think that's the hope that a lot of you know, a lot of UT fans are holding out hope for. You know, in Knoxville, you always hear that, you know, back to 98. Wish it was 98 again, the season they won the national title. There's always a belief that can come back.
Okay, yeah, but that's not on ESPN anymore. That's on the History Channel. I mean, do they not agree how long ago that has been?
You know, it depends on how much of an optimist, how much of a glass-half-full guy you are. I mean, you don't have to go to 98. You can say, well, hey, in 07, Phil Fulmer won 10 games, was, you know, contending for an SEC title. So that's not more than two decades ago. That's a little over one decade ago. And you can talk yourself into that a lot. You can say, well, Butch Jones won 9 games back-to-back years.
He did.
You can get there if you want to. I think the more realistic UT fan says this team and this program looks less like Georgia and more like Kentucky, and that's scary in the long term, especially when Kentucky looks more like Tennessee a few years ago at a 9-win team than Tennessee does.
And you know what? And I mean this. God bless every Tennessee fan who legitimately says, no, I want to keep standing in there swinging. I want to get back in there and take another shot at Bama. Because honestly, I talked to a buddy of mine who's a Tennessee grad, and I want Bama. I was like, you're like a Civil War reenactor. Like, why do you want to invite this same rear end kick? And he's like, no, we're going to beat him sometime. I was like, well, that's true if you play him another 100 times, or maybe another five or whenever. Wrapping up again, Adam Sparks talking Tennessee, Knoxville News. On field, Joe Milton, that is a whole lot of quarterback. That is a big, big kid. What's his real chances? Because Josh Heupel was just the latest to talk up Joe Milton last week in Birmingham.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about judging this quarterback battle is each guy has a supposed strength or a possible strength, and they have a deficiency. So Joe Milton can throw the ball a mile. Will he learn the offense quick enough? Because he wasn't here in the spring, that's a pretty big question. And does he have the time to do that, especially if you're splitting up reps? And that's the guy out of Michigan. I mean, you've got Hendon Hooker out of Virginia Tech, has played a lot of Virginia Tech, has experience, looked pretty good in the spring. But the big question with him is decision-making and accuracy. And in Josh Heupel's offense, you can't have a guy that can't complete 60% of his passes and is throwing picks. Harrison Bailey comes back as a guy that played some last year, looked pretty good in the spring game, has some experience. A number around the program would probably pick him or Milton as a front runner. But he can't throw the ball deep, or at least hasn't shown they can throw it deep. That's a supposed deficiency. And in Heupel's offense, you need the deep ball. So, at least that way you're going to be able to go in and see which deficiency is not going to get fixed. And once they figure that out, you'll see reps, I think, cut down to two guys. And maybe stay that way. I have a hunch that this is going to be more than one quarterback playing in the first three games, not just one guy.
Yeah. If you can't throw deep in the SEC as well, it's going to look like 15 defenders on the line of scrimmage. The coaching's too good. They'll figure that stuff out. Can I ask you one question about your old beat, real quick?
Sure.
How's it going to work with Clark Lea? And I know where the bar is set in Vanderbilt. Hey, let's have a 13th game. But how's it going to work with him, you think?
Well, I mean, he's very philosophical. He's a very similar to a Tim Corbin. That's a very, very good friend of his. Okay. The difference is if you win like Tim Corbin, that sounds like this sage, philosophical, great coach. If you don't win like Tim Corbin, that sort of talk falls, that approach falls on deaf ears. So it's really going to depend on if he can get them at least to competitive, a 5-6 win level. The one real good thing that they have in him is he actually believed that Vandy can win. Six wins, seven wins, who knows what that is. But he is a firm believer, and a lot of times you don't have that with Vanderbilt coaches because they're trying to get to a bowl and get another job. He's a Vandy alum. He's a Nashville native, and he's sold on Vanderbilt. And it's hard to find one of those guys. They do have one of those guys, and I think that will help recruiting, especially in the Nashville area.
Adam, outstanding stuff, man. Last time I'll ask you about Vandy, unless they're playing Tennessee, man. Congratulations on the new gig. Look forward to your information every single day, brother.
Awesome. Good to be on.
All right, Adam Sparks again from Knoxville News Sentinel. And that's the baseball coach he's talking about. I want to talk baseball for 2 seconds. I'm actually going to ask a question. Have you heard anything updated about Kumar Rocker? Man, what an awful, awful thing. The elbow and the contract with the Mets. And I mean, it's just, there was a situation with a draft pick, Brady Aiken, I think, coming out of high school 5, 6, 7 years ago. And he was the draft. I think he was the first overall pick, and Kumar went what, like 10th. And it was the ulnar ligament, UCL, I believe. And they didn't sign him. First overall pick. And they're like, yeah, no. And when you're potentially the first overall pick, and then you think, well, maybe Leiter will go, and then you go, I mean, it's just a tough, tough deal. So we'll see how that goes going forward. But again, he was talking about the baseball coach over there or a championship program. Well, you literally are a championship program.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at AtlantaRamjack.com.
Of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now, more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
I have told you before that I have done sidelines on football broadcasts, radio and television. And if you scooped up just the awful sideline reporters, I would be the most awfulest. Like, it's, I'm not, folks, it's hard work doing sidelines. And they may throw to you once a quarter, maybe twice at injuries or something like that. And so our next guest, man, he's got that belt over me, that's for sure. And really good host at a really great station down there, 92.5 and 1010 on the AM dial in Jacksonville. It is Rick Ballew, sideline reporter for the Jags, among other duties. Rick, what's up?
Well, Chuck, how are you? And, yeah, we're back this year. You know, a college game allowed them out there, at least a nationally broadcasted events. I forget about local, but last year we were in the front row, the entire NFL, the national sideline reporters and local. So, you know, I just found out last week while I was in Charlotte for the ACC meetings that we will be returning to the sideline for the 2021 season. So pretty excited about that.
Like I said, I'm impressed because I've worked sidelines before and I'm terrible at it, man. You've got to have relationships with medical personnel or coaches or players or somebody to get anything these days, and that takes work over a long time. But you also cover Florida State, among other college football interests, and it's going to be a little easier for you to cover them in a couple of weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I learned last night that they're going to be here for 5 days. They're going to roll in and practice at the University of North Florida. That'll be August 10th through the 14th. And, you know, I wish I knew this a week ago when I had a chance to talk with Mike Norvell back in Charlotte. I think it's an interesting move, you know, kind of get away a little bit of that old school training camp type of feel. But, you know, I also got to believe that it's a huge recruiting tool for Florida State. I thought that the COVID really affected Florida State more than anyone else. I mean, you look at the teams that everyone really follows here in Jacksonville. Kirby Smart has all of the SEC and Deep South roots. Manny Diaz, heck, I went to school with Manny at Florida State. He was a fraternity brother with my brother and was actually in the media for a couple of years before he was a graduate assistant under Bowden and went to NC State. And, you know, we all know about Dan Mullen at Florida, Mississippi State, back to Florida. So, you know, that I think that hampered Mike Norvell. He didn't have the ability to pound the pavement and go into these high schools and develop relationships. And he's doing that now, and you can see the results with the 2022 recruiting class for FSU. So I think coming here, very fertile ground. It's only two hours and 15 minutes down the road from Tallahassee. Is a benefit in that particular aspect.
I was talking to a buddy of mine who covers the team last week, and because I had Mike Norvell on, I was in Hoover at the SEC media days, but you know we had Dan up there and he got him on. So I'm talking with Coach Norvell. It's like the fifth time I've talked to him, and I commented to my friend, I was like, he's so soft spoken and like he's very analytical, so clear, you know, high level thinker, whatever. When you talk to him, and my buddy said, yeah, get him in a group setting. And he turns in, like, there's a switch where he can be Southern football coach. Do you see that very often?
Well, it was interesting because much like yourself, I've interviewed him, you know, a few times on the phone. But because of COVID, last year was the first time I actually had an opportunity to, or excuse me, last week was the first time I actually had a chance to meet him in person. So, yeah, I think I came away after the conversation I had with him on air, and he even spent a few minutes with him off air. I told him I was a Florida State grad, and I'm still very well connected to a lot of very good players who played there, and just the feeling that is going on with this program. I got a better understanding of what he's all about. I think he was overwhelmed a year ago, and deservedly so. I mean, the program was left in just terrible shape. But yeah, I feel much better about him now than I did, before I had a chance to meet him. It's going to be hard, though. It's a difficult schedule, and this roster is like, 2/3 brand new in a little over a year since he's been there. It's going to be a tough challenge.
All right, now you mentioned the overall roster, and I'm going to drill down a little bit on the offense, but if you look at the bottom line results, one of my measuring sticks is, does the production at least equal the talent level? And so I'll do this for teams that I got some expectations for. I want to. I'm like, all right, I'm going to compare your roster to everybody you play. Clemson and Florida, it's not really close right now, overall strength of roster. And Miami's got an edge, and probably Notre Dame. Well, no, definitely Notre Dame. All right, well, that's four teams. That means the Florida State at least draws even or has more talent than eight teams they play. Fair evaluation on my part, and what's the chance that the production is actually eight wins?
I think that's a little unrealistic. I got them at 6-6 or 7-5, and let me tell you why. The four teams you mentioned, I think they lose. They go to Boston College when it's cold.
That ain't
and
easy.
That's going to be late November, and that's sandwiched in between Miami and Florida. So that's got automatic letdown written all over it. And you take that trip to that small stadium there. I'm from Boston. It's a tiny little stadium in Chestnut Hill, and it's going to be bitterly cold. So, I like BC there. And then I got to look at North Carolina. I mean, I still go through it and try to find how they actually knocked off the Tar Heels a year ago. Now, I was one of the few who actually voted for Miami over North Carolina in the Coastal. I think Carolina's going to be real good. I have a little bit of question on their defense, but obviously that passing offense with Sam Howell, and you know that they're going to be chomping at the bit after what happened a year ago. So, I'm looking at those six teams right there as losses, and can they win possibly one of those six games? Sure. Then you look at an NC State that went 8-4 a year ago. Louisville is a team that you can't dismiss. So I think what Florida State has to do this year is they have to win the games they're supposed to win. And then can they knock off a team or two where they're an underdog? If you can do that, you may be able to get to the eight wins. But if not, I think it's going to be around a .500 season. I don't say this often, but it is a very difficult schedule. Certainly, you look at the six out of the last seven that they face. I mean, you can make the case that four of those teams will begin the year in the preseason top 10. And, that's going to be a tough situation there for the Noles.
Wrapping up, Rick Blue, again, 1010 XL, also 92.5 FM down yonder in Jacksonville. Truly great station, man, in the South, talking football, especially Jags flagship, among others. All right, so it's been probably five seasons since, and I'm just thinking, top of my head, 2017 is when it started, about five seasons since the Florida State offense has really been rolling. And, I mean, there's been injuries and O-line and recruiting misses, and we didn't get a quarterback for 2 years. I mean, I know all the reasons, but if you're a Noles fan, you're like, yeah, I know the reasons too. I just want to see us score more. How does the offense get fixed in August?
That's a tough question. I will say that I was very impressed with meeting with Jordan Travis. He really shocked me. It was the biggest shock that I received out of Charlotte because, when they put him in 2 years ago, he was an automatic jolt. He really provided a juice to the offense, but it was as a running quarterback. And, when I spoke with him last week, I actually stopped and re-asked the question, and he got pretty thorough on it. He told me he is a passing quarterback. He has always been a passing quarterback. And when he, was taught under Eric Cresser down the deep south that he was a passing quarterback. When he got to Florida State, they made him a running quarterback. So, the reports out of Tallahassee have been that he's really improved this year when it comes to throwing the football. He has added some noticeable weight gain, positive weight. And I think that there's the difference maker if he can really pass the football. The McKenzie Milton story is a very good one. We're all aware of it. I stood next to him, and I just said to myself, you've got to be kidding me. If this offensive line is anything like it's been over the last past half decade, McKenzie Milton is going to get crushed. back there. So that's worrisome for me. I think they got a couple of backs that they like, particularly Corbin. There's not a go-to wide receiver right now on this football team. Someone has to emerge from that group. I mean, it has been such a long time since Florida State has really had a very good, you know, wide receiver. Tamarian Terry certainly did some nice things during his junior year, but of course he disappeared last season. So, yeah, you know, I'm with you right now. I don't know where all of these points are going to come from. It's going to be very interesting to monitor that. And, you know, I think what you want is for them to be able to run the football first and then set up the pass. But, yeah, that's going to be a blast to figure out if, in fact, they can find the end zone in 2021.
Last thing I want to ask you about is the defense, and specifically the coordinator there. You know, I mentioned about a month ago, I was like, anybody listening right now, can you name the Texas A&M offensive coordinator? Because it's not Jimbo, even though that's what we all think. I don't think anybody who's not a Noles fan could I mean, get first or last name right, the Florida State defensive coordinator. But he's got a track record of turnarounds, and that's real at a couple of places where you don't get talent like you have in Tallahassee. Tell everybody about Adam Fuller.
Yeah, you know, I thought last year was a really difficult season for him, but it wasn't all on him. I mean, Adam Fuller was, you look at his contain, particularly in the amount of bodies that they went through. One good note that you really have to look at here for FSU is it was not a great recruiting class, and we talked about that, but they really took advantage of the transfer portal. And, you know, this is a second year in a row where they're bringing in guys who are going to be able to start. They have a chance to have three transfer starters, you know, two on the line. Jermaine Johnson out of Georgia, we met with him. What a sharp individual he is last week in Charlotte. They love Kira Thomas out of South Carolina. So, you know, much like the Jaguars, and the biggest problem that they have here in the city is getting to the quarterback. They only had 18 sacks a year ago. I think that's a huge issue here for Florida State. If they can get a little bit of a pass rush, I like their linebackers. I think it's their best group with Gaynor and Dix Jr., and if Emmett Rice can ever get healthy. And then, again, we'll see about the contain. I mean, if you look at five-star, four-star, three-star, it's a pretty highly regarded group, yet they're going with, you know, transfers and Jones and Akeem Dent, the highest-rated guy of them all, is having trouble seeing the field. And, again, they've had to deal with the injuries there. So I'm looking for a turnaround defensively. I think Adam Fuller has a chance to make them a better defense in year two than Mike Norvell does to make them a better offense in year two.
I want to ask you about one guy. You mentioned Amari Gaynor there. He, you know, there are a lot of linebackers, especially in an even front. You can kind of funnel everything, and they can make tackles. He makes plays, though, and I like that. I mean, he's a big-time ball player, and he's also kind of anonymous around the conference.
He is, and, you know, he's a legacy. I was there when his dad was there, and he was a wide receiver, Herb, and this kid just flat out got it. He can move all over the football field. I think that you can question perhaps the way that he has been used early on in his career. Now, Florida State's not talented enough right now where they can say to him, go ahead and freelance and go make some plays. But, you know, I think because of what we just spoke on with the lack of pass rush, man, you got to gamble a little bit. Yeah. How about some exotic blitzes? How about doing some things that maybe offensive coordinators and offensive line coaches aren't expecting? And he's the guy that you can do that with. I mean, he's a future NFL player who can move all over the field, east to west. He's great against the run, and he can also, if you ask him, get to the QB. So, you know, I think out of anyone on that defense, he's got an opportunity if they turn this D around to, you know, make a shot at, let's say, all ACC if he has that type of year.
Oh, yeah, and I think he could be one of those new breeds, because I agree with you. He's a Sunday guy. I think he'd be one of those new breeds that it's almost like a blown-up safety that you play at, you know, quote, linebacker in the NFL. At his size, I absolutely think he could do that on Sundays.
Yeah, we'll see. He's a little heavy right now, around 230 or so. But, yeah, I mean, I look at someone like you know, Miles Jack here in Jacksonville,
he's
a little bit heavier as well. Yeah, I think he is, isn't he? Amari Gaynor?
Okay.
I don't have a roster in front of me, but I think he's that big. I may be wrong, but I want to say Amari Gaynor is 235.
I'm trusting. Huh? No, my brain's going to melt out the side of my ear right now. So, no, I'm going to defer to you, man.
Yeah, he's a 230-some-odd pound linebacker. Absolutely, yeah. He can play the middle, and he can also go outside for you. So drop him back to a safety, who knows? But, man, you know, when you start saying that, I start thinking of, like, you know, Derek Brooks back when we heard that every year when he weighed about 210 pounds.
Yeah. All right, brother. Well, I appreciate the input as always, man. Thank you so much.
All right, Jeff. Have a good one. Thank you very much.
Rick Blue from 1010XL. Yeah, I lost my mind there for a second. Double check. No, you ain't got to double check it. I trust him. Yeah, just a good ball player, though. And like I said, it's one thing to rack up. In fact, I'm going to give you an example. If you go way, this is going to be obscure as all get out. If you go back to the late 90s, Georgia Tech had a pair of linebackers that I looked at, and I was like, they're both Sunday guys. It was, what do you got, Dan?
232, according to the Seminoles official website.
Oh, you rock on, Amari. Georgia Tech had basically two starting linebackers, a guy named Keith Brooking, who then went on to the NFL and played like 15 years. He had a guy on his hip, and I mean, they moved a guy named Ron Rogers. And I think he played for the Ravens for a minute, had a cup of coffee in the league, I think. He was every bit as tough, every bit as fat. As a Saturday guy, he was every bit the linebacker. But we like Chris Landry will tell you, it doesn't matter necessarily what your stats are. In the NFL, they want to know, how did you get to those stats? Dan, you were covering the Bulldogs, weren't you? Who was the kid that transferred from UAB and then led the team in tackles? You know,
Jake Gainis. I was about to call him Gainer, but no, it's Gainis.
Jake Gainis, absolutely. And now, okay, assuming my brain's functioning right now, he was a safety at UAB. And then he went to Athens, and it wasn't the greatest Georgia roster in history. He started and led, I think maybe his only season there, and he led the team in tackles. He was not going to be an NFL player. And you had guys like, was it Ramique Wilson? And, like, that guy leads the team in tackles. All right, he plays in the NFL. Jake Gainis was one of those guys that, all right, well, he had 147 tackles. Well, how did he get them? And when it was the stopwatch and the measuring tape and all that, you can rack up tackles. You got to make plays on Saturday.
Yeah, he was a guy that, of course, when UAB did the initial shutdown of their program,
yeah,
he was one of the few that was able to catch on to a Division I program. And like you said, led the team in tackles, got a Senior Bowl invite, and if nothing else, a cup of coffee in NFL camp. He's now coaching high school football in the state of Alabama. So, I mean, his football life continues in that regard. And I remember him telling me in Mobile he was going to likely go that route anyway. But, I mean, if nothing else, he got a bump and an opportunity to at least get a chance at the playing dream.
And honestly, the UAB program that shut down that he had been playing for, I mean, I'd had done those games before. It might be, you know, on a big day, like 14,000 people at the game. And then suddenly, because the program shuts down, he goes from, I ain't got no player to play, to I'm in the SEC starting and leading the team in tackles. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and wrap up on a Wednesday.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
I've known Shane forever, and we were great friends when he was in South Carolina the first time. I mean, he's one of the class guys in this business. He's always done things the right way. He was a great ambassador for South Carolina. He was there at Georgia, Oklahoma, Virginia Tech. I mean, Mississippi State.
Dabo, and he ain't lying. I'm Coach Swinney. And he ain't lying. Talking about Shane Beamer. One of the real good guys in college football. And, you know, I say this all the time. I'm not an alum. I fingers and toes crossed for Shane Beamer in South Carolina. Those fans, they deserve a winner as much as every fan base deserves a winner at some point. South Carolina fans really deserve a winner. They deserve some manner of championship in their lifetime. And I don't care if it can be conference, although I'm starting to say it can't be conference. But it could be conference. I mean, if you want to talk natty, knock yourself out. It's probably a little over their skis, but I want something for that fan base because right now it truly has never been more difficult. When you look at the number of coaches you have had in the number of years since Spurrier walked away, and I agreed with his I believe the reasoning he gave. He's like, I'm not the best guy. As of today, I'm not the best guy, so it'd be selfish for me to stay. It's been a rough patch, especially with what's going on over other side of the state. So that was Dabo, the South Carolina Coaches for Charity event, talking about Shane Beamer. My whole day has been ruined by the Amari Gaynor thing. I'm not going to know every kid's weight on every roster, but I know that kid, and I'm watching him run around, and I was 20 pounds off on his weight. My goodness gracious. So I went so long with talking with Rick because there's so many good things. We don't have a closing argument. So, Dan, what's up?
Oh, not much. And, you know, from there, by the way, I'm not ever going to call you by your first name again because I don't want to get cussed out.
All right.
That's not what I want. So we just want to make sure that we keep it respectful here and we're able to keep the show on even footing. We've done it again. And what I mean by we've done it again is we've done Nick Saban's preparation for him. Is that he never takes the Dabo Swinney approach of the little ol' us and the Roy bus and all that kind of stuff that people really, frankly, have kind of gotten tired of. But he will every once in a while break out the, well, you guys say this about us, so I guess that must be true. And then it's kind of one of those things that it's almost like a parent scolding their kids. That eventually we all sit in the room and say, yeah, you're probably right, coach. But in this case, it's a guy that does great work for ESPN, Bill Conley, releasing his program stability rankings for 2021. You would think that Alabama comes in at number one, right, with Nick Saban?
Give the measuring stick for what he's saying there. So it's coaching staff and ADs.
It is the coaching staff. It is roster stability, and it is performance stability is what he has. And you can go ESPN and read all of that. But for Alabama, he has them 23rd on this list. 23rd. Saying that coaching stability out of 20, 17.5, 6.5 for roster stability and 9.8 for performance, saying coordinator changes, roster turnover, nothing new for the one man stability machine that is Nick Saban. So then that is the question that I have for you is that if you're going ahead and saying that the man himself is stability onto it own, then how are you having him this low on this list? This is something now that is immediately being posted up on the squat racks and in the locker rooms and everywhere else throughout the building saying, hey, 4 or 5 star, that's all good. That's all fine and fun. You haven't proven anything here. And this guy is even showing you that with all these national titles, you still have much more to prove. We did the homework for him.
It's another example of what I've talked about before with Landry a couple of times. Just take Alabama out of the mix because they skew everything. That turnover for the coaching staff, it's supposed to land you at 23, and it's supposed to be a detriment. Saban's like, no, we're Alabama, changing 6 of our 10 coaches. Yeah, we're good. All right, wraps it up on a Wednesday, folks. Be back 22 hours. Talk more college football right here on Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.